Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I discuss my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Today we are going to talk about the world as it is, not about how it appears to be, but how it really is. There's a reality which exists that not only transcends our physical universe, but also created it. We can't know it very well with our five senses, but we can detect and even communicate with it in other ways. Our guest today is William Arnst. William started a professional career as a research laser physicist, a man after my own heart, working on Star Wars high-energy lasers. He then moved on to software, writing AutoSys, an automated job control system currently in use by most Fortune 500 companies. When he sold that company, he created, produced, and directed two very interesting and unusual films, What the Bleep Do We Know and What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole, which explores spirituality, quantum physics, neurology, and outrageous possibilities. Will, along with his wife Deidre Haiti, recently co-authored a book titled The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. William Arnst, welcome to the show, Will.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, you wrote, as I mentioned, or you produced two films, unusual films, What the Bleep Do We Know and What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole. And then you and your wife wrote a book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. What's the message you're trying to get across to your audiences?
Well, the message has evolved somewhat, but I guess you could say the message is, and you sort of said it in the intro to the show, is that, yeah, we have our five senses, and our five senses define our physical universe, but there are other worlds, and there are other worlds that interpenetrate this world, and to the fact that in our culture, in our society, generally those other worlds, the spiritual dimension you could call it, is ignored or, you know, kind of laughed at, or in the scientific world kind of thinks it's crazy. And because that's a part of our existence, our experience, and it's cut off, that leads to a world out of balance. And it's pretty easy to see right now that the world is fairly out of balance.
You know, both Plato and Einstein thought the world was an illusion. They had different reasons for it, but they thought the world was an illusion. Is this world an illusion because it doesn't exist, or because we perceive it in a certain way?
Well, I'm going to give you a theoretical answer now, and the theoretical answer is it is an illusion, but it's only an illusion because there are worlds that are more real than this one. And I say it's theoretical because I haven't had that experience. My wife Deirdre has, and when I was interviewing Andrew Newberg for What the Bleep, he had interviewed all these people who had these mystical experiences, and he said across the board, once they had one of these experiences and they came back to this world, they all said, this world's the illusion. I was in another world that is more real than this world. And then you can ask them, well, what do you mean more real? And they go, more real. More, you know, so that sense of what is real is something very intrinsic to us being alive. And so when the people come back, they say, no, there's these other worlds that's more real than this one. And so that's why the mystics forever have been saying this world is an illusion. I mean, it is an illusion, but, you know, you shut your foot in a car door and suddenly the illusion becomes very real. So that's the paradox.
I of course agree. I see it as our senses. It's some brilliant mind laid out this concept that if we looked at this world, this universe, through a certain set of frequencies, like our eyes, our vision has, you know, we have a very small window that we see the world, and we hear a very small window, and we feel very, you know, a vibration window. Then we will get a perception of the world that, you know, in a certain way. And you know, it's interesting when science comes up and they put their they look at the world differently, infrared, so on and so forth. It appears very different. And to me, the illusion is really just how we see it. It seems to me that it's there. It's just we see it in a certain way. And because we see it in that way, we don't see the other real realms, if you will, at all.
Well, I mean, I think that's a pretty good way to describe it. It kind of makes me think, I watched this show yesterday on TV. It was a documentary on the first subway in America when they were putting a subway in Boston. And they were saying in the 1860s and 70s, electricity was considered, that's pretty strange stuff. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't hear it, you cannot perceive it. But it was this mysterious thing that you couldn't see, although if you interacted with it in the wrong way, it would kill you. So they said there was a really, back then, it was this electricity was this mystical, people were assigning mystical properties to it. They said if you got an electrical field, it would cure all your illness. I mean, there was all this sort of stuff. And then, of course, nowadays, electricity, I mean, we're surrounded by it. No one thinks twice about it. But back then, it was considered, because we couldn't perceive it, very, very mysterious. Well, I think that, you know, we're at the next stage of that, where there are these other energies, let's call them, that we haven't invented the machinery yet to be able to perceive them, but they do interpenetrate our lives. So, you know, I think that's the next step in science, when they finally tackle the question of what really is consciousness.
Speaking of consciousness, why do we have so much trouble? Why does the scientific community have so much trouble dealing with consciousness? You know, they don't. If you listen to it, you know, the orthodox view says that consciousness is really just a couple of neurons in our head that and when we die, consciousness disappears. Why do you think they have so much trouble with it?
Well, I mean, you know, science has really been brought up. You're brought up saying that, well, you know, there's the physical world. We understand the laws of physics. And that's really all there is. But at least the laws of physics are demonstrable. So you can drop the apple from the tree and it always falls. Okay, gravity exists. So they have the trouble then admitting that there is something else. So to them, I mean, we kind of feel like consciousness is in our head, and we know we have a brain in our head. And so, you know, it's a relatively simple thing to see why people say, oh, that is therefore consciousness. Consciousness is just an odd thing that when you put enough neurons together, you get self-awareness. I mean, that's their theory. But I think it's just when you get brought up in a certain worldview, and you build your educational career on that, and the scientists who go and get their PhDs and whatnot, you know, they have their whole worldview is really based around that notion of the physical universe is all there is. And so once you make that assumption, you know, it's sort of an unsaid assumption that people have. Once you make that assumption, the answer has to be that consciousness, awareness is just a bunch of neurons doing a strange thing. Now, you talk to these people and you say, well, what about out-of-body experiences? What about these near-death experiences? What about these operations where people, where the brain is actually dead? There's no neuron activity, and people report hearing the conversations in the operating room, which by that model is impossible. And you say, well, what about that? And they say, well, that doesn't prove that consciousness is outside of the body. We just haven't been able to explain it with the neurons yet.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that's like saying, well, we know Elvis is still alive. We just haven't found him yet.
I agree with you. I agree. Hey, do you think consciousness controls matter?
It can. It can. You know, and there is, of course, theory that all of matter, all of energy, all the physical universe that we do experience, that has all come out of consciousness. Consciousness is what creates that. Now, saying that, I don't have a direct experience of that, but it certainly seems to make a lot of sense as to how the physical universe came into being.
Yeah, you know, the Christian Bible, and I don't go there very often. I picked up a phrase that was recorded in the Sumerian clay tablets that they found, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago. That's been translated, and we all know it. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word the Word was with God, and the Word was God." I've always thought that it would be clearer if the translation, and I don't read cuneiform, was "in the beginning was consciousness, and consciousness was with God, and consciousness was God." You know, the word kind of says the same thing, but it would be, to me, a clearer interpretation of what those old clay tablets said.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, there's a whole thing about translating, how you translate things, and how things can get skewed by the choice of words. I think it's pretty amazing they ever figured out how to translate cuneiform to begin with.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, and some of the stories that come out of the cuneiform when you read it are pretty amazing. But in the beginning was consciousness.
Yeah.
And where does that come from?
Yeah, exactly. Do you think we're co-creators of our world? You think that maybe, you know, we've been given the building blocks here, but, you know, it's our mind and we create the world we live in individually?
Well, we create it in a certain psychological sense. In other words, you can look at the world, something happening in the world, and it can make you very, very sad. Or some people will look at the same world, the same information, and it makes them very happy. So in a certain sense, we do create that. I think we on the level of consciousness do create opportunities, do create things that we attract to us, or we push away. I think all that's true. It's not so true in a literal sense. I remember I was in my early 20s and I got my hands on the Jane Roberts book, Seth Speaks. And in it, Seth was saying, "You create your reality, you create your reality, you create your reality." So I'm sitting in my room, I'm like, okay, I create my reality. I'm going to shut my eyes and I'm going to, you know, make a Christmas tree appear because I create my reality. And I really, really focus on it, and I open my eyes and there was no Christmas tree. So, creating at that level, now, some people claim that we do have the power and the ability to do that, but we're kind of at this point, we're in, you know, first grade, and we don't really quite understand differential equations yet. Eventually we'll get there, but it's a long process, and we have to evolve ourselves and become more aware to be able to get to the point to do that.
We need a stronger mind. You could imagine a mind that could create this this universe is strong enough to mold matter, maybe, but the mind that just lives inside you and I may not be that strong just yet.
Just yet.
Yes. You talk about a silent watcher observing us. Wait, who's the silent watcher that you talk about?
Well, that's a good question. The silent watcher, I mean, to me, the silent watcher is that part of myself that's beyond the ego. And by the ego, I mean the personality structure, the likes, the dislikes, the history, that sort of thing. And it's this part of ourselves, the also known as the observer, that's just watching. And I consider for myself a transcendental part, because it gives a perspective that in my normal everyday chit-chat mind I don't have. And so it's sort of almost like you could say pure awareness. The silent watcher isn't there manipulating things. It's not creating desires, all that. It's just watching. And for me, it's so important for evolution, because otherwise you get stuck in your day-to-day life, stuck into, oh, damn, I'm in the traffic jam again, you know, stuck into all that. And the silent watcher is the part that lets one transcend themselves and really observe what they're really happening. So it, to me, it's a way, it's a doorway to what you would call the higher self.
Which we often refer to as the soul, maybe?
Yep.
Okay. So we have a soul, and we have an ego or a personality, however you want to call it. What's the relationship between the two? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think of the personality as basically it's the clothes you put on. Now, no one would really think that, you know, when you put on your Armani suit that you're Armani or that's who you are. It's just an outer covering to have you interact with the world. And I think of my personality as that's just how I interact with the world. When I meet someone on the street, it's the personality. And it's something that obviously you develop as you grow older. It becomes more and more fixed, and that's one thing you have to watch out for. It becomes so fixed after a while, you don't change anymore. So that's, to me, that is the personality, and it's tied to the body. Once the body goes, the personality goes. And then you say, well, what is the soul? And I believe that the soul is the spirit, the transcendental part, the part of us that doesn't die. And it's going through these experiences in the world and evolution. When I look at nature, everything is always evolving. Everything is always changing and really becoming more complete, you could say better, whatever, however you want to put it. So really the soul is here to experience all those things, and maybe in the fullness of time, you know, we're evolving to the point where we can just shut our eyes and create a Christmas tree if we want. But of course, at that point, then you start asking the question as well, I can do it, but is it really the thing to do? Which is gets into all the realm. But that's kind of the way I think is the soul is the transcendental, the deathless part, the eternal part, that's forever evolving. And the personality is just the clothes we're putting on.
You think the personality is a construct of the soul? You think the soul created it and said, "Okay, you know, I need to I need to learn something, or I want to deal with something, or I want to experience something, and I'm going to do it through my personality, and then I'm going to sit back and watch and see what I learn from it?
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that. I mean, I think that when we reincarnate, the soul's there, and the soul is basically, kind of looking for parents and looking for the body that is going to give them the experience that is best for evolution. But it's a little bit of give and take, you probably, the soul may have this list of stuff it wants to experience, and it's like, well, out of 100, if I incarnate over there with Tony and Sue, I'll get 95, so I think that's as good as I'm going to do, and there's certain things that maybe I wouldn't necessarily want, but oh well, it's a physical body, and the physical world is a world of limitations. So on the one hand, you create that, but then there's a certain amount of randomness. Quantum people love that. There's a certain amount of randomness that just comes in, and it's kind of what makes the physical world a little kind of wild.
And that comes in with our free will, does it, or does it come in more than that?
Well, there is that question of free will, and how free is the will? I mean, I have free will, but nevertheless, if there's a snowstorm out there, and I go out in my bathing suit, probably in about no matter what my free will is saying, in an hour I'm going to be dead. So when one says co-creating. We're co-creating all the time. You're creating your experience with the snowstorm. So that is a co-creation. So it's not like some people think, oh, I create my reality. They have this vision that we're an all-powerful consciousness sitting on Mount Olympus, and we get to create every little thing. And that's kind of egotistical. I mean, it's all co-creation.
It's like karma. We have free will. We can do what we want. However, there are repercussions, and the concept of karma kind of says, hey, if you do this and it's not the right thing to do, then you're allowed to do it, but there's some repercussions that will follow that you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you think
that's
we
called
have a
suffering?
Suffering. It's called suffering.
It's called suffering.
Yeah, we all experience that. Pre-life plan. Do you think we have a pre-life plan?
Yep.
Who plans it?
Well, we did.
Okay.
But then you could say create our pre-life plan, who created that before we were around to create it? This is something for us scientific types. We like thinking about these things. So.
Right. So when we say we're talking about our soul. That's the watcher. Do we have help?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's
who helps us?
Well, I mean, you could say God if you like using the G word. I mean, there are, there are other back to what we were talking about earlier, there's other realms of existence, other realms of reality, and those realms are populated by beings also. I mean, they're different from us, but they're populating. And I mean, in the classic religious text, you always hear about guardian angels.
Right.
And, beings that are around to help us out, to, give us ideas, sometimes to protect us.
Spirit guides, if you will.
Yeah. And, I mean, if my wife Deirdre, who I wrote the book with, was here, she could give you a detailed description, because she's one of these people who perceives these beings from other realms. She has she has since she was 3 years old.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, there's a story, one of her first memories, she was 3 years old. This is a great story. It's true. And her family was camping, and there was a tent, and her little brother, who was baby brother, who was like 6 months old, was sleeping in the tent. And so Deirdre goes out of the tent, and she goes around, and she starts talking to her friend, the tree. And back then, she would just talk to nature, you know, animal, plants, whatever. So she's talking to her friend, the pine tree, and suddenly the pine tree opens up, like it just like opens, and she sees this vision of a pickup truck come running down, running over the tent, crushing her little brother, and then slamming into the tree. She sees it. She turns around, she runs into the tent, grabs the little brother, runs out of the tent, pickup truck comes roaring down, crashes through the tent, and slams into the tree.
Wow.
There's this, you know, dust is everywhere. You can't see. And her parents just start screaming because they thought Deirdre was in the tent. They thought, oh my God, our two kids just got run over by a pickup truck. And the dust settles, and there's Deirdre standing to the side holding her little brother. And they're like, oh my God, it's a miracle.
Wow.
And, you know, what happened? And she was three, so she couldn't really tell them that the tree had shown her that in a vision. And what had happened, some kids had been playing in this pickup truck, and they just accidentally kicked the emergency brake off. Sure enough, the thing went down and crashed into the tree.
But it was vivid enough for her to remember when she got older to be able to reconstruct it.
Oh, yeah. And she has a very good memory. And so, yeah, she kept trying to tell him this is what happened. And her language, she says she kept getting so frustrated. But it was like it became, you know, family folklore. It's like, and I mean, how did she know? I mean, you know, this is one of those things, you know, the scientists might say, well, that's just, you know, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, well, wait, how did she know to run in and get the, you know, poor little brother out? So, you could say, you know, when you talk about a guardian angel, you don't really think of a guardian angel as a tree. I mean, that's kind of stretches your mind a little bit. But in that case, you'd say, yeah, that was some sort of angelic presence. Maybe there was an angel that at that point incarnated in the tree. I mean, this world is probably a lot stranger than we think. Incarnated the tree to give her that vision to do that. So,
Let's go back to consciousness. How far down do you think consciousness goes in the in the realm of life? Animals appear to be conscious. How far down in the animal kingdom do you think it goes?
Well, I think it's kind of like a light bulb on a dimmer switch. You know, yeah, there is still a, you know, a consciousness, but by the time you get to an ant, there may be consciousness, there is a bit of consciousness there, but, you know, it's probably not going to be developing relativity. You know, it's probably doesn't have a lot of self-awareness. I mean, you know, the mystics say that, you know, why limit yourself to animals? What about plants? And then, you know, what about rocks? I interviewed this guy for a movie once, a shaman, and he said, you know, you're also limited. You're interviewing me. Let me interview a rock. And he picks up this rock, and he does this interview with the rock, and it's really pretty amazing the things that the rock is now telling him. So that gets to the idea that everything is consciousness. I mean, you say
everything in the natural world, basically, that the universal consciousness or God or whatever, however you want to take it, has incarnated some aspect of its consciousness in virtually everything in nature that exists. Maybe not in the car that we created, but in maybe originally in the ores that the metals came from, in the planets, in the tree that Deirdre was talking to. Hard to say.
Yeah. Well,
interesting set of concepts.
Well, but, you know, you say, well, probably not in a car, but wait a minute. I mean, if we are, you know, divine beings, and we have this transcendental consciousness, and we take different elements together and put it into something like a car. You know,
maybe we've created something. Maybe we've put some consciousness together, and by golly, the car does have a personality.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a car nut. So I am one of the people who, you know, think, yeah, cars definitely have personalities. And you'd say, well, you're just projecting something on it. No, maybe, but, you know, there's the idea that we're saying that, you know, in the beginning was the word, or in the beginning was consciousness, and consciousness then put itself forth and created things. Well, if we are consciousness and we put together a Chevy, well, you know, there's something in that beyond just a collection of material.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, if indeed we pre-plan our life and incarnate, and I think you and I both agree that we reincarnate multiple times, why would we plan to live in this difficult world? Are we forced to do it? Or do we, if we have free will here, do we have free will there? Do we have to come here? Why would we do this?
Well, I think of this world as it's school. And, you know, we learn things here. And because it's a world of demonstration, because it's a world where there are laws, things are real. I mean, like I said, you shut your foot in a car door. Well, that's because two objects can't occupy the same space at the same time, and so things have to move out of the way. So there is a demonstrable aspect of this world that you can't disagree with. So as for a learning place, as far as a playpen in order for us to evolve, it's probably pretty good. So, you know, do we have to come here? Well, if it is the place to learn and it is the place to evolve, then, and we have that desire to learn and evolve, and I think that is intrinsic in pretty much everything, then, you know, it's like, well, you know, do I want to go to Harvard, or do I want to go to Mississippi State? And you might say, well, you know, I could go to Harvard, but, you know, I think Mississippi State, I think I'm going to learn some really valuable lessons there that I need to learn. So I'm going to go to Mississippi State. So I think that, you know, we do have some choice in the matter, but we're compelled by a inner desire or need to evolve and learn. And this is the playpen to do it in.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you know, I look at it as maybe there's a number, maybe we, you know, we come down here and we live these difficult lives, and some lives are really, really difficult, and we probably pick up some wounds along the way, and I suspect one of the places to cure some of those wounds is to come back and redo those experiences that caused us problems along the way. I could see that as a way. Maybe we just like to explore. Maybe we just like to come down and see what's going on and stick our nose into, you know, things and see what happens. But, you know, I wonder about a terrorist. You know, do you think somebody would plan to live a life of a terrorist? Or do you think they just go astray when they get here?
No, I think people, they have, you know, the Hindus call it a samskara. That's a past life tendency. And so, you know, someone has a tendency and they're very, let's say they're very angry. They're very hurt and they're just, you know, you meet people who are angry and or people who are just, quote unquote, looking for a fight. You know, so they go out Friday night and they go to a bar where they know they're going to get into a fight. You'd say, well, why do you create that? And there's just this anger that has to be worked out. Now, you sort of go back, where did that anger come from? I mean, it could be often the anger is something happened when they were young that was very violent. And, or the thing is that you find kids that are physically abused, they grow up into be a parent that physically abuses their kids. Because they're caught in these loops of action, reaction, action, reaction. So getting back to the silent watcher, if you listen to the silent watcher, eventually the silent watcher goes, yeah, you know, every Friday night we're going out looking for a fight, and every Saturday morning you feel bad about it. So don't you think maybe you've got to look into this to see what's happening? So I think that, you know, as far as why a terrorist, that's just something that's coming in from past lives. Now, I had a teacher once who said, and this is very controversial, but said, well, you look in the Middle East with the Arabs and the Jews, said that basically what he sees a lot in reincarnation, they just keep flipping back and forth. They're a Jew in one lifetime, and they come back as an Arab who hates the Jews, and the Jews come back. There's something, and there's just like a group of souls that are just, you know, it's the Hatfields and the McCoys. They're just feuding, and they just keep flipping around and doing this crazy dance. Like I said, this is very controversial, but I think there's a lot of truth to it, where you just come back and forth and back and forth, and they just keep repeating and repeating it. And, you know, eventually you got to get to the point where you say, you know, this just isn't working, and, you know, it's time to get above it. And that's the growth process.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all if that was true. You say in your book, fear is a construct in the architecture of your mind. Are you saying fear is an illusion?
Well, it's a construct. You could say it's an illusion, but again, once you say it's an illusion, then people tend to say, oh, well, so it's an illusion, so I can just ignore it and go on. I mean, it could be, it's because it's a construct in the mind, it can be unconstructed, and then it's not there. So in that sense, it is an illusion. However, when you're in the grips of fear, when the lion is coming after you, and you're in fear that you're going to get chomped, it's pretty real. So now I should probably just mention that this book that we put together, Not So Little Book of Surprises, it's really all of the wisdom teachings and the mystical poetry of Deirdre, who's been writing poetry and getting these, you know, messages from the other world since she was three. And what I did is, she has all these transcripts. It's like 10 volumes of transcripts. Well, what I did was I went through them, and as a documentary filmmaker, you spend a lot of your time messing with transcripts. You're always looking through the interviews you've done, and you pull out the juicy parts. So I went into her teachings, and I started pulling out these quotes that I thought were very interesting. And once I pulled them together, there's this photographer that we know, Andre Balog, and he had 3,000 photos laying around in his websites, not knowing what to do with them. And I associated the pictures with the quotes of Deirdre. And the reason I call it Little Book of Surprises is because a lot of her quotes I find surprising. I find interesting. She is being a mystic, she has a very unique way of describing things. So when she says fear is a construct, that's like one of those things, it's something you can think about for a day. What do you mean fear is a construct? Is it really exist, or is it a construct? And if I constructed it, can I deconstruct it? So that's where that comes from. So when you say to me, you say in your book, I had to come clean and say, well, I didn't say that. Actually, Deirdre did. I'm like the director who took like all the script and all the pictures and put it together into a book.
Okay. Mystic. You've used the word mystic a couple of times. How do you define mystic? You know, I've heard mystic defined as somebody trying to become reunited with God. I've heard the word mystic as somebody who's seeking wisdom and truth. How are you defining mystic?
The way I think of it is a mystic is someone who perceives and lives in worlds other than the normal worlds of time and space and the five senses. So it's a very, you know, my view of that is something very practical. So someone who sees the future, someone who knows what's going to happen before it happens, you'd say, well, in the world of physics, how could that possibly be? Because time is this odd thing that just keeps marching forward. But the mystic is able to go outside of that and see it. So I see the mystic as someone who perceives things. And it may the perception may not be something like having a vision of seeing a truck hitting the tent, but the mystic may just have an inner feeling of the way the universe works on a deeper level, and then they talk about that because they've had that perception. So that's really what I think a mystic is, and based on that, then you kind of go to the point that most of us are mystics. I mean, everyone, maybe not full-time mystics, but, you know, everyone's had the expression of the experience of, like, there's someone you know from college. You haven't thought about this person for 5 years, and suddenly you think about them, and 5 minutes later the phone rings and there they are. Yeah. I mean, so many people have these little experiences like that. Why? Where they were in that moment outside of time and space. But then, oh, it was a coincidence. Well, it was a little more than just a coincidence, everyone. So that's my definition of, if that is a definition, of a mystic.
It's an explanation, and I like it. Prayer. Is prayer important?
Yeah, prayer is important. It's, now, I don't tend to use that word, because I was brought up in a very religious family, and
you've moved away.
Yeah, and at one point I was like, you know, I don't like all the Christian dogma. I don't like the stuff about original sin and how we're all going to fry in hell unless we do the right thing. So there's a certain rejection to all of that. In the end, I'm sure I do pray, but so prayer is a state where, for me, you acknowledge that there's things, forces, perceptions beyond my understanding of them, and it's a way of connecting into that.
Is it asking for help, or is it more gratitude, or is it more information?
All of the above.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you could say it's really a moment of connecting with I was going to say a higher source, but I don't know you say it's higher, but it's connecting with the universe in a different way.
Okay. You talk about a paradox in the book. Maybe Deidre does, but the book has it. And where everything in existence is part of a one universal mind or universal consciousness. And at the same time, you view the universe as consisting of an untold number of separate souls, separate spirits, each with free will. How do you explain that? Are we all one, or are we? Is there a whole bunch of difference?
We don't explain it. That's why it's a paradox.
Okay.
And for when you're in your mind, when we're in our logical mind, you say, well, this can't be true at the same time, because they're mutually distinctive. Don't you know about Aristotelian logic? This is, you know, so you're talking nonsense. But again, when you talk to the mystics, or let's say you talk to the enlightened ones or whatever you say, they don't have any problem with that. They're like, oh yeah, that paradigm, yeah, that's just the way it is. Get over it. You're just stuck in your mind. There's other ways of understanding the universe. The logical mind is one of them, but there's other things. And so for the people who have those perceptions, they do live in paradoxes all the time. And that's something that if you read the literature of spiritual adepts, You know, they're all like, yeah. I mean, time doesn't exist. You know, it appears that it is, but you can go forward and backwards in time. And really, it doesn't exist. There's only an eternal now. And you say, well, wait a minute. That's, I don't know. I just, you know, if I drop a brick on my foot, time existed because before it didn't, my foot was fine and now it hurts. So come on, get over it. And then they're like, well, no, time doesn't exist. So yeah, our logical mind, which really is conditioned by the world we find ourselves in, can't get there. But these beings say, well, that's, you know, that's your limitation. Someday you'll grow out of it. So
right. Maybe someday. Maybe it's got something to do with the fact that we really don't understand what consciousness is.
Yeah, we don't. But I mean, maybe consciousness is infinite. Maybe we'll never truly understand it because it's just something that goes on forever.
Right. Does life have a purpose?
I think it does, and I think that purpose changes as we change.
In a given life or over lives?
Both. Like, think about when you're a kid, you know, your purpose in life is to grow physically. You know, you eat food, try not to get hurt, that's it. But the one's purpose changes over time. So, you know, even very mundane. You see these people who want, you know, look at Bill Gates. He, you know, he had a purpose of, he wanted to do computers and make a ton of money, and he did all that. Now his purpose has changed. Now his purpose is really helping people, really using his wealth to make the world a better place. So, you know, purpose in a very mundane aspect changes, and I think over lifetimes our purpose changes more and more. And you know, I think as you evolve, eventually the purpose starts becoming to merge with the universe, to become more complete, whatever that is.
And that's kind of, how about existence? There's one for you. Does existence have a purpose?
To be or not to be, that is the question.
tough question.
You know, does existence have a purpose? Well, I mean, some people say existence is there. The only purpose for existence is for God to know itself.
Right.
And that, you know, I
think that's probably as good an answer as you get. And I'll tell you, it takes a bit of thinking to work that's a much more sophisticated answer than appears on the on the surface.
Yeah,
it's really an interesting perspective. Do you think we add value to the universe?
Yes, I do. There's there's, what's the famous line from Shakespeare? Nothing new under the sun, Horatio. I actually don't believe that. There is new, you know, people are always creating new things. And so we do add to the universe. I look at nature. For some reason, lately, over the last year or two, I'm just fascinated by how dirt gets made. Do you ever think about how dirt gets made?
I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, when the Earth, you know, first created, it was just this lump of cooling off whatever, and volcanoes are going off, and it was just kind of like rocks, and that's it. And then they start getting worn down, and then you have the plant life starts very primitive, and then, you know, things start dying off. I remember when I was first time I ever went hiking in the mountains after college, I remember walking around and I stepped over a log that had been decaying for a while, and I kicked it as I stepped over it, and I said, oh my God, that's how they make dirt.
Right.
Is that life happens, and then you hit that, and then it becomes, now the soil is a little bit richer. And so the nature is always making things more and more richer, more, there's more complexity to it. So that whole thing about how dirt gets made, and you know, there's more dirt on the earth now than there was 200 million years ago, because it keeps, you know, it keeps becoming richer and richer and richer. So that's kind of, I think that's the way the whole universe is. And, you know, when you get a brilliant mind like Einstein comes along, he, on a different level, he enriches the universe. He enriches our understanding of it. So I think that's just what we do.
Well, I could talk to Will. I could talk to you for the rest of the morning, but unfortunately, we've run out of time. Why don't you tell the audience how they can find you and Deidre and what you're up to these days?
Well, this not so little book of surprises. And it is surprising. We have a bookofsurprises.com website. Or you can just go to Amazon, of course, the big beast, and order the book there. And the book is it's a thoughtful coffee table book. It's a large format, beautiful pictures by our award-winning photographer, and it's a sort of book that you can, the way some people do it is they use it like an oracle. They just open it up, and you just read a page or two, and that's kind of your thing to noodle on for the day. If you want to know more about Deirdre, she has a website, deirdrehaid.com, and I'll spell her name, D-E-I-R-D-R-E, Haid, H-A-D-E.com. And there she talks more about what her experience is, and she has some courses and meditations and all that good stuff. As far as what we're doing right now, we're just really out there talking about the book and doing interviews like this. And you have to do that nowadays because, as we all know, everyone is so overloaded with information and materials and electronic this and blah, blah, blah. So we're just out there talking about the book. And person, for me, these concepts are so that we have there. And I pulled out the quotes that I think really are something that's very timely. Like, we're in a world of chaos right now. I think most people agree, and a lot of structures are falling apart, and people are upset. And really, there are wisdom teachings in this book that help one to navigate the world we live in. So that's what I'm up to.
Will, thank you so much for being on the show, Will Arntz. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.